Today's podcast is brought to you by Howie's new book, Paperboy. To order today, go to HowieCarshow.com and click on store.
Better strap yourself in. It's time for the Howie Car Show.
I think at this point, we can say it's not going to be an acquittal. I think the most Trump can hope for was a hung jury with one person holding on.
And my biggest concern, of course, is that five of the seven read the New York Times, which is deeply alarming.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
Jimmy Carter, by a long shot. Jimmy Carter's happy because he's had a brilliant presidency compared to Biden.
That's about gas prices. They've been going up over the last month, 20 cents a gallon. Is the president considering any new actions like releasing more oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve?
I will note that gas prices remain well below their peak.
But it's only 3 cents lower than a year ago. It's up 52% from when President Biden came into office.
Rump swabs, hacks, and moon bats beware. It's Howie Carr.
Welcome back to the Howie Carr Show. This is not Howie Carr. If you were listening just before the break, Howie is on his way to Mar-a-Lago. There's a buffet calling his name. Is that what he said, Taylor?
Wednesday is buffet night at Mar-a-Lago.
Will we get an alert if Howie does get to talk to Trump? Like, do I have to just watch my Twitter feed to see if there's a picture? Like, how am I going to know?
That's exactly how he will post a photo if he sees the president tonight.
Well, I hope he does. I hope he sees Emma Foley as well. I am Aaron Chadbourne, filling in for Howie Carr, joined by Taylor Cormier. Taylor, thanks so much for making the magic happen. You might know me. I'm on WGAN up in Portland, Maine, where I help host Inside Maine, and I fill in up here. I fill in for Grace, former senior policy advisor to Governor Paul LePage, one of the greatest governors in our state's history. We certainly wish we had him now. And while I'm on the topic of Maine, and I promise not to make this broadcast about the state of Maine, I do want to give a shout out to all the Republican legislators who are putting up with whatever the Democrats are doing in Augusta right now. I don't know if it's like this in Massachusetts, Taylor, but today is statutory adjournment in the Maine legislature. And with single party control, right, you have Democrats in charge of everything, just like in Massachusetts. They keep you up until the wee hours of the night, and they try to pass all of these crazy, terrible things. I think a few gun restriction bills. I think they just banned bump stocks. They're just flying fast and furious. They passed an abortion trafficking bill, a transgender surgery trafficking bill. Like, they're just everything, and they do it in the dark of night. So sending thoughts and prayers to any of the legislators up there. Any of you, feel free to call in, too. We'll have you on 844-500-4242, the number here on the Howie Carr Show. And it's been I don't know if I was going to say it was an eventful day, because you've got everything that's going on right now with Speaker Johnson and the fact that Marjorie Taylor Greene has brought or is threatening to, and I think she's introduced the motion to vacate. So there's a lot of focus on that. But at the same time, we had what was supposed to be the impeachment of Alejandro Mayorkas. Now, this is also interesting because it was also sponsored by Marjorie Taylor Greene. And I thought, you know, I filled in for Grace a couple weeks ago when they announced when they were going to bring this, Taylor. And I told Jared, I think that Speaker Johnson was timing the delivery of the impeachment articles, which were, again, introduced by Marjorie Taylor Greene. I think he introduced them this week to try to, like, curry favor with her. And I don't think it's working so well. I think she's still dogging the bone trying to get him out. And it seemed like it was going to be a failed effort until all of a sudden Thomas Massie has now signed on. And I saw Rand Paul giving an interview. And Speaker Johnson has been outdoing this talk show circuit. He was on CNN. He was on Fox Business. He's I think, on every different show. And you know what it's giving? It's giving Kevin McCarthy vibes. It's giving circling the drain, right? Right. You can tell, you know, when like the die is cast, when you start to see them all kind of pulling out all the stops. And I think he's sounding increasingly and increasingly desperate. I think, but I mean, I'm not overly surprised. I don't think anyone's overly surprised, because who the heck is Mike Johnson? And I mean no disrespect, because I think, much like Mike Pence, he's probably a principled conservative. He's probably taken, you know, votes that I would agree with for the majority of his career, right? But he's not anyone that was made for leadership. He was very far down the pecking order, which is both the reason why he was able to get elected, right? When Jim Jordan and Steve Scalise and all of the others, Tom Emmert, when they were all blocked on their pathway to become speaker, they were blocked. But because Mike Johnson was really a nobody, he was a backbencher, he was sixth in line, nobody knew who he was. And that's meant that, you know, he was able to get the speakership, but he has no clue what he's doing. And there have been so many flip-flops, and I really think this, it's Ukrainian aid that's going to do him in, right? He you know, passed the budget, he got it appropriated, he was way, way outplayed by the Democrats at every step of the way. But it's really right now where he's trying to figure out how to have his cake and eat it too. Going from being someone who opposed funding for Ukraine, they brought him in the skiff, they showed him what they had on him, and now he supports it fully, and he's trying to figure out a way to do it. And you can tell, it's the same thing I felt about Kevin McCarthy. Kevin McCarthy blinked. He got up to the point where he would have to actually not fund the government, shut down parts of government, not even all of government, and he blinked. That was his mistake. Kevin McCarthy should have shut down government. You could always trust Democrats to want to vote with you to reopen it. That he could have done. Then he could have saved face. He could have had credibility from his caucus. He could have actually saved money. He could have helped people understand how much they didn't miss government when it was closed down. That's what we did when I worked for Paul LePage up here in the state of Maine. We had a government shutdown, and the Democrats were so mad because while the government was shut down for, it was only over a long weekend, nobody missed it. And that made them more mad than anything because it's the center of their lives. They can't imagine a world in which the government isn't the center of your life. That's what they're after. They're after control. They're after dominance. It's the whole ballgame for them. So Mike Johnson, he finds himself as Speaker of the House, and he really, you know, can't find his way out. But, all right, so he's doing this. He's making the rounds. And who, Taylor, like if you were... if you were a Speaker of the House trying to save your job and build credibility, who would you go on television with? Like, what would you be your first choice for, like, an anchor?
Building credibility?
Yeah, so you're trying
that's
to show that
call.
You're a leader.
Any of the networks these days, you're making right? a really tough call.
Okay, so, but if you had to pick one, all right, bad choice, who do you pick? Which show do you go on?
You're putting me in a corner here. I really... there's no right answer as far as I'm
there
concerned.
There is a right answer, right? But the very last one I would go on with is Jake Tapper. Now, they've apparently known each other for over 20 years. He thinks he can go on CNN and plead his case. And I'm going to tell you, I was kind of like on the fence about Mike Johnson, but now listening to him, I just think he's like out of touch and like way over his skin. Like, you have to listen to how he talks about his job and how he talks about what he's going through to understand how I think he's doomed at this point. Let's take cut 21.
I've not asked any Democrats to get involved in that. I believe the House will do its will. Look, I'm trying to govern and lead this institution at a very interesting, unprecedented time. We have challenges right now that no previous generation has faced. Newt Gingrich posted a few days ago on social media, the Speaker's job is effectively impossible now. He said that I'm doing the hardest job that maybe has ever been in the history of the U.S. House. Maybe, he said, arguably since the Civil War. Why? Because...
okay. So here's my issue with that. Number one, he's trying to sidestep these issues, but there are all these pep talks that people are giving him privately and maybe on TV, and he's starting to believe them. And he's now repeating them because he's trying to convince himself that, what did he say? I'm Speaker at the toughest time in the American history of the Congress, maybe since the Civil War, right? So first of all, I think it's funny that he had to qualify. First he said ever, then he said since the Civil War, realizing the Civil War was probably harder than now. But all right, now he's got these like ideas of grandeur, and you are Speaker of the House of the United States. Now you have a 1-2 vote majority, like, so it's not really, I get it, right? But really, like, you could lead, you could do this. Or if you were going to cave, just own that you're going to cave, right? You could allow that you're going to cave. But instead, he has such a glass jaw that he has to convince us. He has the hardest job. Cut 23.
This is very simple. I'm operating with the smallest margin in U.S. history. I have a 1-vote margin, Jake. So in order to get something into this underlying package, we have to have the votes on the floor to pass a rule. You know, that's how the process works here. The rule allows for the substantive bill to be put on the floor. I don't have all my Republicans who agree on that rule, and that means the only way to get a rule on the floor is that it requires a couple of Democrats. Well, they're not for the border security. That's not their policy. Some of these folks like open borders. That's It's what their votes show and indicate. And so we don't have a way. I literally don't have the numbers. I don't have a way to merge it together.
See, here's the thing. That's the thing about not knowing what you're doing and being outplayed, is that there are all of these procedural moves. It's the one advantage, I will tell you, that we've had to having Mitch McConnell in the Senate, is that Mitch has been around so long and he's been in charge for so long that he's seen all of the tricks that the Democrats play, the rules that they use, how they manipulate. And Mitch McConnell has been able to then use them in the favor of the Republican agenda. We saw it with the judges, with confirming judges at a record pace. It's resulted in the Supreme Court changing the balance, changing the makeup of the Supreme Court. It's because Mitch McConnell's been around. He knows what he's doing. Mike Johnson has no clue. And so here he's like, all right, well, there's this terrible package of bills. So to make it less terrible, I'm going to cut it up into smaller bites. So we're going to eat the same bleep sandwich, but we're just going to eat it in smaller bites. Like, that makes no sense. It does allow, and I think this is really why he's doing it, because I've been trying to rack my brain, like, what is he doing? And I think there are people that want to vote for Israel and want to vote against Ukraine, right? There are those people. And then because he's going to lose Republicans with whatever he does, he has to work with Democrats. So then he has this other border thing, which wasn't the border supposed to be the one thing that we held out for? Like, there's no action on Ukraine. You can't defend the Ukraine borders until we defend our borders. Go ahead. Cut 25.
We're not going to get 100% of what we want right now because we have the smallest majority in history, and we only have the majority in one chamber. The Republicans run the House. We have the small majority in the House. The Democrats are in charge of the Senate and the White House. So we're, by definition, we won't get everything we want. But we got a great product here at the end, much better than the alternative that came in the Senate supplemental. And now everybody gets to vote their conscience, up or down. That's what we're for, regular process, regular order, and accountability to the people. And I think you'll see that here this week.
We're not asking for everything we want, Mike, just one thing. One thing. You're listening to The Howie Carr Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne, in for Howie, and we'll be right back.
The Howie Carr Show will be right back. The Howie Carr Show is back.
Welcome back to the Howie Carr Show. I am Aaron Chadbourne, sitting in for Howie, who is at a previously scheduled engagement. He'll be back tomorrow. No worries. Before the break, we were talking about Speaker of the House Mike Johnson. I've barely learned his name, and they're already talking about a motion to vacate the chair. How long has it been? Like 4 months, 5 months, 6 months? I don't know. It's less than half a year this guy has been in the position. They're talking about the motion to vacate the chair. 512 says, Mike Johnson is just a placeholder for deadlocked Congress. People who expect him to pass legislation left and right are kidding themselves. I mean, that's not too super inaccurate, but you could probably do a better job. Which brings us to today's poll question. Today's poll question is brought to you by Local Silver Mint. Located in Ware, New Hampshire, Silver Dave will work with you directly. Contact him at localsilvermint.com. All right, Taylor, one more time. What's today's poll question and what are the results?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at HowieCarshow.com, is would you vote to vacate the chair and remove Mike Johnson as U.S. House Speaker? Yes, he's been terrible. No, the new guy might be Hakeem the Dream Jeffries. Or no, but I like holding the vote over Johnson's head to stop money for Ukraine.
What did Howie say, that last one?
No, he doesn't want Hakeem Jeffries in there.
That's mine, too. I see. I'm on the same page, because here's the thing. Did you watch the vote the last time? And like, it was a clown show. And the thing that bothers me is when you put Republicans in charge and they show that they don't know what to do, it undermines your argument for ever being in charge again. So I think that's the problem. I think no. I think they might end up electing Hakeem Jeffries. Placeholder is better than nothing.
Now that's in the middle of the pack. 32% agree with you. 55% say no, but I like holding the vote over his head to stop money for Ukraine. And 13% say yes, we should vacate the chair. He's been terrible.
That's probably a pretty reflective breakdown of where people are in the House right now. Wouldn't you think that like 13% probably want him out, and then everyone else is like, ugh, it could be worse, or oh, at least we can keep him from funding Ukraine. But now we're going to fund Ukraine. So like, I don't know what's being achieved here, either by Johnson. And what do you think? When he went into this, and they shared the intelligence with him that got him to reauthorize the surveillance bill and then got him to fund Ukraine. Like, what do you think they showed him? It's going to be something, right? If you have an opinion, 844-500-4242, the number on the Howie Carr Show. Taylor, the text line is saying they like hearing your voice. They probably like you more than me, but I'm here, so I'm filling in. We'll keep on trucking. I wanted to get to the Mayorkas impeachment because I, for one, I've been waiting for this for a very long time. Because if there is someone, if there's a member of the Biden administration, more than the president himself, that deserves to be impeached, it is Secretary Mayorkas, who has single-handedly, I mean, first of all, he has lied to Congress more times than anyone in recent history. So if you're someone from the Trump administration, if you've ever been accused of obstructing Congress or lying to Congress and tried for it, if you didn't respond to your subpoena, you have to look at what Mayorkas has done, and you have to be beside yourself, because this guy, I mean, he not only has he not defended our border, allowing the largest invasion that we've ever seen in the history of this country, but he's refused to do his job, and then he lied about it. I mean, how many times did we hear him say that the border is closed, that there is no crisis? And now they're admitting it because they figured out that for the election, it's better to say that Republicans are the ones that are standing in the way of having the border secure. But it's the Republicans have been the ones been banging the drum and banging the drum. So I've been waiting for this. However, they got rid of it in, like 10 minutes? I think it took maybe a couple hours for it to go, once they delivered it to the Senate, for Chuck Schumer to use procedural voodoo to get rid of it. And I think for the Republicans not to have seen this coming, like, I mean, I don't know why they didn't start a while ago negotiating. Maybe, you know, I'm looking forward to having a new Republican leader in the Senate. I don't know who it's going to be, but I feel like Mitch have rolled over on this one. McConnell said to Schumer, just do what you're going to do. And Lisa Murkowski voted present. I don't think it should be a surprise, but I think it's a disappointment, because if there was ever a time when all Americans, not just Republicans, not just those who for immigration is the first issue, but all Americans can agree that what's been going on at the border is an atrocity. That our own Department of Homeland Security, he's been willfully undermining the security of the United States. The security, the sanctity, he hasn't defended our borders. It's been wide open. It's been I can't think, if you tried, how to do a worse job than what Secretary Mayorkas has been doing. So I was looking forward to the trial. What they did, and we'll get more of this after the break, but what they did is they just moved. They opened up the hearing. They had a little bit of a debate at the beginning about how they were going to conduct the trial, and then they moved to rule it out of order. They moved to rule both counts of impeachment out of order on the grounds they were unconstitutional. If there's someone I don't need to be lectured about on the Constitution, it's Chuck Schumer, the guy that stood on the steps of the Supreme Court, threatening the lives and the security and the safety of the Supreme Court justice. Remember, we're after you, Kavanaugh. I mean, this is the guy that's now telling us that he's the arbiter of the constitutionality.
And they're taking away fundamental rights. I want to tell you, Gorsuch, I want to tell you, Kavanaugh, you have released the whirlwind.
Release the Kraken. We'll get into that and much more when we come back on Howie Carr.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
We are back. I am Aaron Chadbourne, sitting in for Howie Carr. Howie is at a previously scheduled engagement at Mar-a-Lago. Haven't seen him pop up yet at the buffet with Trump. I hope he gets to see him, though, because this is, Trump's day off from court. He can't get off to attend Barron's graduation, but they'll let him attend buffet night at Mar-a-Lago. At least we've got some priorities in this country.
It's a 10th grade graduation? Is that what I heard?
Is that all it is?
Oh, no. I thought it was his high school graduation.
Yeah, I think it's his high school graduation. But I did also see an analysis that said he didn't go to Don Jr. or Ivanka or Eric's graduation. But I guess, you're later in life, people set their priorities on their family. Now Trump has made it. He's not climbing the ladder anymore. He would have time to go to Barron's graduation if not for those pesky prosecutions, which are ridiculous, by the way. But speaking of people who call prosecutors, so Chuck Schumer, and I wish I had more time to pull the other cuts of historic Chuck Schumer. Chuck Schumer back during the January 6th impeachment votes, talking about how important a trial is after there's an impeachment, how it's the solemn duty of the United States Senate to have the trial after an impeachment.
John Trump incited the erection.
He's singing a different tune today. Chuck Schumer doesn't think that trials are in vogue anymore. Cut 26.
The charges brought against Secretary Mayorkas failed to meet the high standard of high crimes and misdemeanors. To validate this gross abuse by the House would be a grave mistake and could set a dangerous precedent for the future. For the sake of the Senate's integrity and to protect impeachment for those rare cases we truly need it, senators should dismiss today's charges.
For the sake of the Senate's integrity. Just let that hang there for a second. For the sake of the Senate's integrity and to preserve impeachment for the future? Go back to what you said 2 seconds before where you said this sets a dangerous precedent. You, Chuck Schumer, are the one creating a new precedent here where if you don't like the impeachment charges, you don't have to have a trial. You just say, oh, we've opted, point of order, that these aren't a charge that we think mean anything, and then you dismiss it. And honestly, it's a lesson, again, for the Republicans, for McConnell. I take back the good things I said about McConnell earlier. He really, really, really could have learned something from Schumer, and you just vote him down. You do what they did. Give him who's the attorney general right now? What's his name?
Merrick Garland.
Give him the Merrick Garland treatment. When Merrick Garland was nominated to the Supreme Court and you just said, never mind, we're going to ignore that. That's what Chuck Schumer did today. He said, oh, well, these charges, they don't rise. It's a constitution. Like, no, like you're now making a mockery of impeachment. So in all of these ways where the Democrats have systematically undermined the institutions that they claim to love so much, this is the last one. And so it means that anytime there's an impeachment in the future, if the other party is in charge of the Senate, they're just going to dismiss it without even allowing the arguments to be presented. And I'll give credit to the Republicans who tried, right? They tried and they wanted to debate and they stood up. I think Mike Lee did the best job today as I was watching it. Wasn't successful, but he did. And he pointed out the fallacy of what Chuck Schumer was saying. Cut 27.
Madam President, as wrong as the majority leader was moments ago in making this particular point of order as to Article 1 of the impeachment articles. Article 1, remember, refers to the willful defiance by Secretary Mayorkas of the law. As wrong as he was in making that as to Article 1, and he was very wrong for the reasons articulated moments ago by the senator from Texas, he is even more wrong, far more so, with respect to Article 2, because Article 2 accuses him of knowingly making false statements. This is a violation of 18 U.S.C. Section 1001, a felony offense. If this is not a high crime and misdemeanor, what is? If this is not impeachable, what is? What precedent will be setting?
Senator,
we need to address
to
this and to discuss it. We need
position.
To discuss
if the
it
would like
in
to
closed session. For that
motion,
reason, Madam President, I move that
all right,
the
you
Senate
can stop
proceed.
It there. I mean, this is what they did. He's doing it. If you're someone like Roger Stone or Mike Flynn or any Trump administration official who's been dragged through it by these Democrats, you're looking at this saying, how can they possibly just excuse it? And then what they do is what you just heard right there, where Patty Murray just bangs the gavel and says, no, Republicans, you don't get a voice. 844-500-4242, the number here on the Howie Carr Show. See, when I host, because I'm from Maine, my Maine callers love to call in. Let's go ahead and take Laura in Waterville. Go ahead, Laura.
Good evening.
Good to talk to you. What's in your mind?
Well, I heard your shout out to the legislators that had been trying to hold the line with regards to gun rights in the state of Maine. And today, in the Senate particularly, there was a lot of backdoor deals going on because they actually pulled out a very obscure law with regards to Senate voting that allowed Democrats who were not present to be able to pair their votes with those who were, and it allowed for 72-hour waiting periods to be passed through enactment and on its way to the governor's office. And I've been watching legislation in the state of Maine for over a decade, and we've never seen that rule used until this year. I guess they're pretty desperate to get their way when it comes to anti-gun legislation, if they're willing to pull out these obscure rules and pair votes with people who aren't even present.
These are the people, Laura, that lecture you about saving democracy. And it's so important that they save democracy that they have to undermine it every turn. Now, they say, oh, we want the national popular vote. So it's one person, one vote. But even there, you see it in the Maine Senate, because Janet Mills has decided that it's war on guns and it's free open season for abortion up till the moment of birth. Right. They'll do anything they can to get their way. And it's I think you're right to be appalled by it.
It's very telling when you have a Senate president that's from the county. That's what we call Aroostook County, one of the northernmost counties in the entire country, which the state of Maine has more guns than we do people. And so he is in charge of how these votes come about. And so when you have somebody who's representing a constituency that is historically one of the most pro-gun areas, not just in our state, but in our nation, that is allowing these types of anti-gun votes to happen, it just really speaks to this constant barrage of anti-gun legislation, anti-gun legislators, and people who frankly have been using things that have occurred in our state over the last 6 months to push through legislation that would honestly, 72-hour waiting periods in the state of Maine will decimate gun shows. It won't allow people to be able to defend themselves in a timely fashion. And even the Maine State Guides Association came out with a letter that was brought before the Senate and the House and said, listen, we've got people that are coming into our state spending tens of thousands of dollars to come and do these once-in-a-lifetime moose hunts and bear hunts. And if something happens to their firearm and they have to wait 72 hours to get a new one, their hunt is over by the time that waiting period is over. So it's just a very interesting dynamic that we have right now in the state of Maine. And I'm hoping that, depending on how the governor falls with her vetoes, that people will use this as an opportunity to have a fire lit under them to go out and vote in November for people who actually care about our rights as Maine residents.
Thanks for the call, Laura. No, you're right. I mean, if you're waiting for Janet Mills to bail you out, if you're putting your hopes on Janet Mills, and again, I worked for her predecessor, Paula Page, and I will tell you, we would be so much better off in Maine if LePage were still governor. We certainly miss him and wish he were still there. But if you're pinning your hopes on Janet Mills and the Democrats to bail you out, they passed a bump stock ban despite the fact that it's redundant with federal law, because they don't want to pass up any opportunity to. And what is that old saying? Don't let a crisis go to waste. The second that the shootings were over in Lewiston, there were a flurry of bills put in because people who've been pushing this for forever finally saw their opening. 844-500-4242, the number on the Howie Carr Show. We'll take more of your calls when we come back from this break. I'm Aaron Chadbourne in for Howie Carr. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
He's Howie Carr, and he's back.
Welcome back to the Howie Carr Show, 844-500-4242, the number if you'd like to join the conversation. I am Aaron Chadbourne, sitting in for Howie. We'll go to the phones and talk to John. Go ahead, John.
Hi, Aaron.
How's it going?
You know, it's going pretty good, but we're ready to build our own wall up here, just north of Bangor. And, you know, we're not represented. You know, they're trying to take our vote away with the national popular vote, take our gun rights away. We're simple people. We like simple life. And we won't be marginalized. You know, we just want to be left alone.
Good points, John. Thanks for the call. No, I left that off my list of the crazy stuff they've been cramming through under the cloak of darkness up in the Maine State Legislature, joining the National Popular Vote Compact, which, Taylor, explain this to me. In Nebraska and Maine are the only two states in the country that split their electoral votes. In Nebraska, they decided, hey, we want to change that so that all of the electoral votes go to the same person, the person who wins the popular vote in Nebraska. And they said, how dare you? That's anti-democratic. That's, how can you take that away? It's going to just support Trump. In Maine, the Democrats are changing it, and they're saying, oh, not only are we not going to split votes, but we're not even going to award Maine's electoral votes to anyone based on who the people of Maine vote for. We're going to award it based on who the people in California and New York vote for. It's ridiculous. Like, how do they do it?
That's just bizarre. That sounds very bizarre to me. Well, of course, Maine also has ranked choice voting, too. So, I mean, this is not too far off base.
So Janet Mills, she didn't veto the bill and she didn't sign the bill. She did that chickening out thing where you let it become law without your signature. So if the governor doesn't act in a certain number of days, the bill becomes a law. So she did that and she said, oh, well, because, you know, if unless we can get the, I think the most fair system would be national ranked choice voting. That is what she said. You're right. You hit it. You've got them figured out, Taylor. They really do have their agenda, and their agenda is ranked choice voting everywhere, because they want to undermine the ability for people they disagree with to win. That's it. They're just trying to change the rules of the game. And we saw it. We saw it in 2020 when the rules were changed many times without following the constitution of a given state, without following the laws of a given state. They used COVID to rig the rules of the game, and they do it every single time. Every time they're in charge, you can rest assured that they're going to change the rules of the game to favor themselves. You see it. And what do they get? What do we get in return? What we get in return is President Joe Biden, which, I mean, there is an argument to be made, and I think Trump made it just yesterday in Harlem, that Biden is the worst president in the history of the United States. Actually, let's take it from Trump himself. Cut six.
I think what's going to happen is we're going to end up doing so well. We're way ahead in the polls against Biden. Biden has destroyed our country. Look, Biden is the worst president in the history of our country, worse than Jimmy Carter by a long shot. Jimmy Carter's happy because he's had a brilliant presidency compared to Biden. He's destroyed our country between the borders and everything else. He has destroyed our country. Not only that, wars are breaking out all over the world. We'll end up with this foolish person, this person that doesn't act. We're going to end up in a World War III. So we have to get rid of Biden.
We're going to end up in a World War III. I honestly think November is going to be too late. Don't you think we're already there? Don't you think World War III is already beginning? And Biden's doing everything he can to fan the flames and start it everywhere. I think November's too late. It's funny, too. He mentions Jimmy Carter, and it was Jimmy Carter's birthday not that long ago. And I felt bad because, like, on his birthday, I was like, didn't he already die? And I remember his wife passed
away. I just thought the same thing as soon as he mentioned him.
But he's been, like, that guy, and I will say this for Jimmy Carter. He is the longest living former president of all time.
I think he was put in hospice last February.
Over a year ago, the guy has been in hospice, but he is a person of faith, so maybe that's playing a role in it. See, faith actually serves you well. Other Democrats could take note. But yeah, I had this whole thing where they were celebrating. I think he turned 90, he turned 90 something, and they were celebrating his birthday. And I was like, didn't this guy die? And like, no, like Jimmy Carter's still kicking. You saw the images of him at his wife's funeral, though. He looked awful, but good for him.
See, if you look that great when you're 90, whatever.
But I'm not going to make it that old. But I also think do you think he wanted to stick around long enough to see a president who was worse than him? And he's like, oh, I can't stop watching now.
That would be a pretty good motivator.
Right. You're going to stick around until history books turn around on you because they say rather than being the worst president, you're now the second worst president of all time. Although the history books nowadays, because, you know, up is down and down is up and woke is the new black. Like, I'm sure Trump, do they rank Trump number? Like, they must rank him last, right? Like, there's no way that you can still be in a credit. By the way, speaking of academia, did you see Elise Stefanik is at it again? And she's after the president of Columbia this time. And I don't know how, as an Ivy League president, you stumble your way into Congress and not know what you're walking into. And we don't have time to get into it and play the clips. But the president of Columbia University now had the same Elise Stefanik treatment. And she flubbed it. Like what is wrong with these people? Is it just hubris that they think they don't have to prepare? They're just so much smarter than these Republican rubes in charge of Congress that I can just walk in unprepared and say, oh, no, everything's cool here. It's insanity to me. But maybe it just shows how out of touch they are, what's going on their own campuses. They think that things are fine. They think that if I just tell you how great Columbia is, you'll want to give us more federal dollars. And that's also in the whole talk of student debt relief. What really gets me more than anything else, and I am really upset about the people who made smart decisions, didn't take out student loans, paid them back on time. They're not getting forgiveness. If you never borrowed it, you're not getting the bailout. But the question that we don't spend a lot of time on is, where did the money go? Who got it? So, yes, I understand that people had loans and Biden trying to wipe them out on the backs of the hardworking men and women who never took out the debt or who worked hard to pay it off. That is terrible. Oh, Texter says Carter is 99. That's older than I thought. But so I understand the outrage for the people who are now having to absorb those costs that never took them out on their own. But where did the money go? The universities took it. They pocketed. It was a transfer. It's a wealth transfer on the backs of hardworking men and women, not just to the people who took out the debt, but to where they paid it. And those universities aren't being made to give it back, despite the impact they've had on this economy, despite the fact that so many people graduating with all of this student debt aren't able to pay it back because it didn't improve their ability to get a job and improve their lifestyle. When are the universities going to pay that back? Let's take one more call. 844-500-4242, the number on the Howie Carr Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne. Let's go to Henry. Go ahead, Henry.
Yes, I believe Biden doesn't care if America is ruined or if there are world wars, as long as people aren't talking about him and Hunter Biden and all the corruption that surrounds his family. I think everything to him is a distraction that he's happy about.
I think there's something to that, but I don't know that he's just I don't think he's ever afraid that they're going to talk about him and his corruption, because he ignores it. He's brazen. He's brazen, and it's because he has the right letter next to his name. It's because there are two systems of justice here in the United States, and he knows it. He's in no fear, and he's not worried about it at all. Thanks for the call, Henry. That's all the time that we have today. I'm Aaron Chadbourne in for Howie Carr. Howie will be back tomorrow. Huge thanks to the Portland Radio Group for letting me broadcast here at WGAN. Thanks to Taylor Cormier. Howie's back tomorrow.